Well, thank you, Jennifer. I'm honored to be here again. This is kind of an annual event. I've been coming here for many, many years, as Jennifer pointed out. And if people don't recognize me, they ought to get out a little more. It's been 15 years since I was elected as lieutenant governor, and I recognize that that not everybody gets out. And Jennifer was talking, I was reminded I was in Smith's grocery store. I do the shopping for the family and on the weekend. And as I was at Smith's, I was in the produce aisle pushing my cart, and I could see coming the other direction this lady who was just kind of eyeballing me. And I thought, well, she probably recognizes who I am. And she came by and she looked at me and says, "I know you." And I said, "Well, pleased to meet you." And she says, "You're one of the brethren, aren't you?" So, not quite in the way she meant it, but I am one of the brethren, I guess. But anyway, it's nice to be with you, and I appreciate the Taxpayers Association hosting this every year. And before I mention my remarks, I know we've got this president and the speaker are going to be here to present their side of the issues as we look towards the upcoming legislative session. But before I start, let's just recognize, hopefully we reflect and appreciate the remarkable success that Utah's had over these last 10 years. And even beyond that, I mean, we've been a great state. We are probably, this last 10 years, been the best 10 years economically, certainly, of any time in our state history. The Wall Street Journal's mentioned that we're the brightest star on the flag. They just came out with a report here just a couple of weeks ago and said we're the brightest economic star in the country right now. And as you look at the past 10 years, the economic growth that's taken place, we've created more jobs over the last decade than any other state in America per capita. And that's, of course, created some issues for us because we are now, the last decade, the fastest growing state. So the challenge of growth and population increase has been a new and growing issue for us to be concerned about, and one of the things that keeps me awake at night. And that's in spite of the fact our birth rate's gone down dramatically in the state of Utah. We used to be number one there. We're only number four now. And we are not even having this past year of 2019. We did not have birth rate that, in fact, was replacement value. Replacement's about 2.1 births per female. We're at 2.03. So our unique demographic changes and shifting that's occurring as we go forward, but overall we've been dramatically successful. And for many of the governors I work with, you know, they refer to Utah as the gold standard of what governance in a state is supposed to be like. I would suggest to you that's because of a number of things. One, we have in this state, I think, extremely good high values and principles. Secondly, we, out of those principles and values, as we reflect the people, we've developed good policy. We've created a more fertile environment for the entrepreneur and most business-friendly place in America today, recognized by Forbes, 6 of the last 9 years, and the lowest we've ever been is 3, by the way. We're number 2 right now. That's because salaries are going up and incomes have increased dramatically here in the state of Utah. Probably the second fastest of any place in America today. So the shifting is occurring, but yet we remain at the top. We adjust, we modify, we improve. And the last reason is that we have really good people in Utah that we represent that are not really looking for government to do everything from cradle to grave like some areas of our state or of our country are doing in other states. So the combination of all those things allowed us to excel in remarkable ways in what would be some challenging times we've gone through out of the Great Recession and where we're at today. And I know that the Utah Taxpayers Association is pleased to know that based on the Utah Foundation's latest study that we have the lowest tax obligation, the lowest tax obligation here in the state of Utah that we've had in the last 27 years. So we're leaving more money in the households and individuals. We're having government become more efficient, more effective. I'm pleased that on our watch, we've reduced, in fact, the number of employees per capita dramatically. Again, I've said it before, but you ought to take note and appreciate the good work of the legislature, the executive branch working together, because you have to go back to the year 2001 to find a lower number of state employees than we have in the state of Utah today. And as you know, government is labor intensive. We don't make anything. We just have a lot of employees providing service. And so the fact that we have such a lower ratio now, it went from, on the last 10 years, from one state employee of 127 Utahns, now it's one state employee to 153. And what that means to the taxpayer is we're saving annually, ongoing now, over $400 million a year for the taxpayer. That's in the face, by the way, of about 900,000 people since 2001 of new people now calling Utah home. So many more people of service, fewer laborers. That's efficiency in state government. One of the great examples I like to talk about is everybody complains about the DMV. And it used to have, 15, 20, 25-minute wait. Today, the average wait time in our Department of Motor Vehicles is 5 minutes. That's efficiency in state government, something we can all be pleased with. With that being said, let me talk about a couple of three things here very quickly that I think are important for us to probably ponder about and anticipate as we go into the next legislative session. I'm going to quote a Chinese philosopher, Confucius, who you all know about, who said this: better a diamond with a flaw than a pebble without a flaw. And what that sounds like to me is the old adage that we use all the time, certainly with the legislature, is that let's not let perfect be the enemy of good. And yet we see that play out many times in politics, particularly in Washington, D.C. You can pick your own issues and your own players, where we have somebody that says, I want 100%. I want 100% of the loaf, or I'll take no loaf. No compromise, no bend, no coming together. We want perfect, and that becomes the enemy of how about if we just were able to come together on getting good. And I think that really kind of reflects not only a number of issues, but Neil, best-selling New York author, business entrepreneur Neil Patel said this: trying to make something perfect can actually prevent us from making it just good. Perfection in its elusive glory is like a unicorn. Sure, it sounds great, but who's actually seen one? I'd rather ride a real horse than wait for an imagined unicorn. Again, we see it happening around the country and other states, and certainly in Washington, D.C., but not so much in Utah. We're named the best state for business by the United States Chamber of Commerce. And as they had 60 different criteria that they measured, they said that the one thing that stood out in Utah as they did the analysis was the spirit of cooperation and collaboration was found in greater abundance in Utah than any other place in America today. That's a tribute to you folks, to our legislators, to our local government leaders, the business community, coming together and saying, let us reason together and see if we can't find a way to move ahead together. I think Patel's observation applies to our tax reform efforts that we've know about here, and I know that I appreciate the fact that the Utah Taxpayers Association has weighed in. They add some clarification. They add some understanding to correct some myths and misinterpretation, misunderstandings that have taken place with tax reform. I'm going to talk about two or three of those issues. And again, I'll refer you to the Utah Taxpayers webpage for their analysis of it, which I think is very good, well done, and I appreciate them stepping in to the issue. Although good people can differ on policy, I think some of the criticisms really are unfounded. For example, the common comment we hear from many is that this was rushed through. this new tax policy was done really on the fly without having the depth of discussion and understanding that it would warrant. I just want to refresh everybody's memory that this was brought up originally under Governor Orlene Walker. The same people that worked with Governor Orlene Walker and then with Governor Huntsman as we made some tax changes and on this tax referendum or tax reform today are the same economists, same CPAs. You'd be hard-pressed to find an economist or CPA that does not believe that we needed, in fact, to modernize our tax policy to reflect the changes in the evolution of the marketplace out there. So not only did we have a full session of discussion on this issue, and certainly the things were modified and changed dramatically from what its original proposal was to be, reflecting the fact that the comments were taken and considered, and in fact made a part of the tax reform package that came out. Not only do we have a full 45-day session, but we announced at the time, at the end of that, that we will continue this through the summer and we will have a special session to finally conclude this effort. Took a little longer because the legislature, in their wisdom, ended up having 17 different public hearings around the state, making it easy for people to come and focus for 2 or 3 hours at a time on this one issue throughout the state. I can tell you, I don't know that in my time here, which has been 15 years and one more to go, where there's been an issue that's had as much public input and comment as this tax reform. 62 hours of, in fact, actual testimony being received during the summer months in those 17 sessions. So I think it's really not fair to act like this was rushed through. You may not like the end result, and I think many of the people are talking about it being rushed through. Really, the reason they use that as criticisms because they didn't like the end result, the policy. The desire, of course, under the tax reform was to broaden the base and lower the rate. It's not where I thought it was going to be or wanted it to be, but this is the first step. This is a process, and I think the legislature really spent the time necessary to get it right, at least to this point. And again, most experts understand and agree that we're in a situation that needed a course correction. And as an example of that, just so you understand the imbalance, the numbers we have, and we will build our budget based on the consensus numbers that have been given, agreement between us and the legislature, again, something that we do very well together, so we're all trying to slice up the same pie and see what our priorities may be. The legislature and the executive branch. But the surplus monies, we had $482 million of surplus money. $442 million of that is income tax. Only $40 million of it was sales tax. So you can see the dramatic change and shift that we've had when our economy is shifting more to a service-oriented economy, and yet we're not, in fact, having that part of our GDP taxed. It's not fair, it's not equitable. We already have 62 services before the 11 that we just added, services being taxed. And they've always said, why are we being taxed and nobody else is? So the desire to bring fairness, equity to the system is one that we all should aspire to. It's not easy, it's hard to do. But I appreciate the fact that we actually have broadened the base and lowered the rate. In fact, we've lowered the rate to the tune of $160 million in tax cut. 85% of the Utahns will, in fact, pay less tax this year than they would have did last year. That's a broadening of the base, and that's a lowering of the rate. The second issue that people have said is because you're, in fact, putting the rate back up, we've never taken it all off of food, but raising the rate back up to the 4.85%, that somehow we're going to be balancing the budget on the backs of the poor. I know that's a legitimate question and a concern, but it's not true. This actually, for the Democrats in the room, this is more progressive. Because anybody below $75,000 annual income will get some kind of a break under the new system. We're going to raise about $250 million in sales tax off of food, the increasing rate. And those who are above $75,000 will not get anything. The wealthier people will pay the tax, and the poorer people will have that money redirected back into their needs. $215 million is what they will receive. And that's half of the $160 million income tax cut. We've corrected the problem with the federal taxes for dependents that was taken away. That's, we're a year late really doing that, but it's being done now. And so the benefits really are dramatically favoring those of low to moderate incomes. Not only are we going to, in fact, have tax credits and dependent credits for those of lower income to help them reduce their tax obligation, we're having prebates for those who want to get it up front. We have people say, well, they can't manage their money. Well, I hope we don't fall into the trap of what George W. Bush said, I think very appropriately, is the soft bigotry of low expectations. The soft bigotry of low expectations, where we think that somehow because these people are poor, they cannot handle filling out a form or going to the right place. We have SNAP programs, WIC programs, charitable giving, which are all tax exempt already and will continue to be so. But people are capable, in fact, with a helping hand and a little love and guidance, in fact, to follow the simple process will allow them to have prebates, allow them to get rebates on their taxes and the credits that are necessary so that the low income, those in poverty, will not have to not only not pay for the food, but they certainly aren't going to have to pay for the tax. Last but not least, let me talk about education. As most of you know, with the cooperation of the legislature, we've increased education funding dramatically over these last 10 years. When I came into office, we were spending about $2.6 billion on public education. What we will be proposing here with the upcoming legislative session is going to be probably close to total will be around $4.9 billion. We've increased the revenue for education, public education, as an ongoing revenue stream by over $2 billion over these last 10 years. A dramatic increase. I'm not saying it's enough, that we wouldn't want to continue that effort. I think we will and should. But we've been pretty good to education, and the results show, and I've said this often, it's not all about the money. It's some about the money. And the legislature, in fact, has stepped up and said, let's make sure that we, in fact, fund education appropriately, and have done so. And the beneficiaries are that we now have we set a goal, just like we did to become the best performing economy, to be the best performing education system. And guess what? U.S. News and World Report says Utah is number two in the nation when it comes to educational achievement, second only to Massachusetts. We've come from really low middle of the pack to really in the top 10. If you look at our NAEP scores, which I know Howard used to like to talk about when he's in the legislature a lot, we're in the top 10 in reading language arts, math, and number one in science. So as we compare state by state, you know, our outcomes are really pretty good. On our quest to become number one, we can see the finish line here. A little more money, continued efforts on our part. We have great teachers, great principals. Our local school boards elected to represent the people in their regional areas. The state school board, all working in concert together, are producing dramatically good outcomes, even though evidently, we're still the lowest per pupil amount of money spent in the nation. So again, I think our efforts on education, we see the results and the efforts, and we should be pleased with the successes we're having there. We don't want to rest on our laurels. We want to continue, in fact, to do that. But I would remind everybody that sales tax dollars spend every bit as good as income tax dollars, and I expect that the legislature will continue to fund in a robust way our education system. And we all know the volatility of income tax. There's this kind of a security blanket there with income tax. being earmarked. But the volatility should at least cause us pause. In 2008, for example, as we went into the Great Recession, our income tax revenues dropped by 20%. That's the volatility of an income tax as it reflects the business cycle. So again, something that, again, the legislature, I think, is certainly aware of and has taken steps. Let me just say, I'll pass out again some bouquets to our legislators here and their leadership. I would dare say that virtually everybody in the body of 104 would rather take a whipping than have to deal with tax reform. It's a heavy lift. It's hard to do. It's complex, and it's not easy to understand. The general public, you hear the sound bites in the media or the headlines in the paper, and it doesn't tell the whole story. 62 hours of testimony, 45 days of a general session, and then a focus of one day in a special session on this issue only. But they did it because they understand that Utah, we in fact take on difficult issues. We don't wait for the crisis to happen and say, oh, well, it'll be easy now because the public at large is aware of the crisis. So now let's act and react, in fact, to the crisis. That's how they do it in Washington, D.C. It's not how we do it in Utah. We try to be proactive and avoid having those kinds of pitfalls, prepare for the rainy day in advance. Aren't we glad that we had a rainy day fund? Again, thanks to Olene Walker when she was in the legislature that we had a rainy day fund when we hit the Great Recession. Guess what, too, with that drop of income tax, 20%, the only way we could pay our teachers those years was dip into the rainy day fund. And not only did we do that, but we dipped into the general fund. Well, we don't have those margins anymore now. The general fund handles core responsibilities of government, and there is not the depth of the money there to say if we had another recession, could we dip into the general fund to in fact subsidize education? Hence the need for tax reform, tax modernization that is more reflective of the marketplace today. And I appreciate the legislature for stepping up and addressing difficult issues like we've done with pension reform, keeping our taxes low, making tax adjustments in the past, and putting in place policies that empower the private sector to grow the economy to the point we are leading the nation as the healthiest, most diverse economy in America. That's the goose that's laying the golden eggs. That's why we're able to be so healthy economically, and that's why we're the economic star in America, according to the Wall Street Journal. So, again, looking forward to working with our legislative friends here on a number of other issues. So we won't take time to hear today, but you'll follow it. I'm going to release my budget tomorrow. I don't want to scoop myself too much here, President. But, again, we're in a great place in Utah's history today, and I think the next decade will be equally as good. Thank you very much.